I'm Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education here at the Modern, and I really appreciate your patience. You're willing to gamble on everything working out tonight, and in fact, it did better than I could have imagined. There was a flight delay, so nobody could do anything about it, but I'm glad it worked out, and here we are. This is our last Tuesday evening's presentation for this season. I encourage you to watch the website or your emails. If you're a member, you'll get email notifications. But I invite you to be on the lookout for the lineup for the winter-spring series that should be coming out sometime in December. Tonight, we are closing our fall 2014 season with Jules de Balancourt, the artist featured in the museum's current focus exhibition, which opened this past weekend. And I think it's safe to say that most of you have seen that exhibition and are here to find out more about that work. Paris-born and now Brooklyn-based, Jules has been the subject of a number of international solo exhibitions, including most recently Misfit Island at Ruchechaux Museum of Contemporary Art in France, and Blue Hours at Gallery Thaddeus Ropac in Paris. And then also Jules de Balancourt paintings 2004-2013 at the Montreal Museum of Fine Arts in Montreal, Canada in 2013. Jules earned a BFA in 1998 from California College of Arts and Crafts in San Francisco, and an MFA in 2005 from Hunter College. Early on, his work was included in Greater New York at PS1 and USA Today at the Royal Academy in London. Of the work, Allison Hurst, the curator of Focus, Jules de Balancourt, writes, "Countering the conceptual and theory-driven movements of contemporary art, de Balancourt's works are immediate, intuitive, and open-ended as they explore the parameters of conscious and unconscious mind." So because we're running a little late, I'm going to end it there, and I invite you to join me in welcoming Jules de Balancourt.
Thanks, Terry, and thanks for waiting for me. Sorry I'm late. We're going to go through a lot of slides in the next 45 minutes, and they're not all my art, and I'll just kind of give you a better idea of my trajectory and how I got to where I am. So I just show this first image because a lot of artists have, I don't know what just happened. I didn't touch a thing. I use this image because I think of myself sort of as like a cultural sieve, sort of processing information, like whether it's media or my daily existence, and how do I transmit that on a visual scale. So I grew up in France and then moved to America when I was really young, and here you can see it was difficulty assimilating for me. It was like I was going back and forth from France to America. So you can see me there on the top left. And on the top right, you see me with a beret in France. So it was really like this rough adapting or assimilating of always trying to, like, I was kind of living as like a tourist in both countries for a while. And I think that informed a lot of my work. So coming to America from France was like the Wild West for me. All of a sudden, it was like I grew up in Paris the first 8 years, and then coming to America was sort of this Wild West. Here you can see images of us camping in Mexico during the 70s. You know, my mom was, you could say at the time, a bohemian hippie, and it was liberating for me, and at the same time exposed me to a lot of different things. I grew up surfing in California. Like, surfing was like a big part of, we'll get to art pictures, I promise, but first I just kind of give a little bit of an intro of where I came from and how I got to where I am. So growing up in high school, there was I eventually decided I moved from Los Angeles and I went to Santa Barbara at a community college because I didn't know what to do, and I started really doing ceramics. I mean, I was always doing art, but I started doing ceramics at community college, and I was making these drums that I was selling at the Venice Beach Boardwalk and Grateful Dead concerts. I was like just kind of living on the outskirts, not getting a real job. And here you can see all these are all the drums I had, so these ceramic drums. So I was making clay, but it was really about designing the clay, so I was already more interested in painting. And these were all the people that had bought the drums, and I would kind of document them. This was like 19 or 20. I was really pretty young here. And then ceramics. I mean, it was a mix of pottery, and then it became more about decorating the surface than it did about the actual pot for me. This is sort of like my wannabe Picasso phase in pottery. This was a pitcher. It poured out of that. And these were also ceramic that I would delicately cut out and fire, and then high fire to cone 10. So it was, I was again very young. This was more influenced by sort of art from Africa or the Middle East. And then this was another ceramic piece. This was all of a sudden I was doing minimalism. I was really young and just sort of susceptible to all these different things. Then I finally moved to San Francisco. I got a scholarship to California College of Arts and Crafts. And here you can see my friends. We were painting. We were doing plein air paintings, but along the highways or the freeways of California, not your typical landscape painting. And this is one of my first ceramic paintings. This is it's all on clay with ceramic pigments. And I was sort of just, this is mid to late 90s, sort of just capturing the Bay Area, influenced by Diebenkorn, Bechtel, which actually you guys have a beautiful painting upstairs, these sort of Bay Area figurative painters. So this at the time was what I was working on. This is another ceramic pigment, sort of kind of capturing car culture, Los Angeles, San Francisco, this sort of isolated houses, objects. These are shipping containers. This is also on ceramic. And eventually it just became too cumbersome and complicated putting things in kilns and pigments and firing, and in the kilns the colors would change. Here you can see the pottery. And this already sort of informs my work now, even though this is maybe 15 years ago, but you can already see like all these, kind of putting these different images together and recreating a sort of narrative. The Colonel Saunders next to the plane, next to the mom and child, and what are these kind of free associative narratives that kind of come up when you just put these images together. These were these silhouette paintings my friend and I did outside in San Francisco in these sort of abandoned neighborhoods of San Francisco. We just did these shadow paintings that were projected on the wall, and we would trace them out with a paintbrush. It wasn't spray paint. It was actually like, here's my palette and my paintbrush. And it wasn't really like graffiti per se. This is one of the last ceramic paintings I made before I moved to New York in 2000. I decided in San Francisco I needed a challenge or a kick in the butt. And it felt like San Francisco was a little too provincial. So I needed to kind of head east and go to New York. And this is one of the first, this is interesting, I mean, because I moved to New York in 2000, and this was a postcard my friend made post 9/11. All of a sudden it was a new landscape or a new reality, you know. All of a sudden these two massive towers were gone, and I just started grad school, the first week of grad school, and it's like, oh, by the way, those buildings are no longer there. It was just such a reality, hard not to... It was hard not to be sensitive to it. And I actually happened to be there on September 11th. So I had actually captured some of these pictures, and it really had a huge impact on me and my work. This was my first semester at Hunter, and I decided, well, everyone was so worried about escaping New York and chemical attacks or anthrax. I said, okay, I'm going to make, just in case, I'm going to make this survivalist boat out of these PVC pipes and barriers I found on the streets and tarps. And that's me in the East River. There it is. It's kind of anticlimactic. It wasn't like the most, luckily there wasn't really wind, because it wouldn't have ended up so well for me, I think. This is early on, making little paintings, putting them together. I didn't really know what was what, or it was kind of like scrambling all these little things and collaging them into one painting. This is kind of one of my first substantial paintings I made at Hunter. It's about 3 by 4 feet, and it's all, most of them are all oil on board, but this phase here, there's still some spray paint or acrylic paint, but for the most part, it's all oil on board. And this is called Peaceful Protesters. We were organizing, you know, all of a sudden it was the war in Iraq, and we were organizing protests, to anti-war protests, because we weren't for it. So we were going to D.C. and we were protesting the war. This is a map painting I made. It was, you know, all of a sudden my work was sort of became a little political, even though I don't consider myself a political artist. But this was the map of the U.S., and then I put the rest of the world in the U.S., like America was just dominating the world, or had the intentions to, or sort of like, you know, we're number, this kind of number one mentality, which, you know. And at the same time, I'd made a treehouse in my studio. So I was still at school, and I was still in grad school in New York in 2003, and a dealer offered me my first show. So this was in my studio, and then that was my treehouse I'd built with two other friends of mine, Andy Cross and Johnston Foster, friends I went to school with. And I had my first show while I was in grad school. And that really sort of launched my... That sort of launched my career. And then from then on, I sort of quit my job. I had a job at the time being an art handler, moving and driving around a big truck around the city and delivering art and schlepping art. And all of a sudden, I was able to quit my job and just paint full time. And as you can, they're all painted on board. And here you can see early on, it was really just plywood boards I found on the street. And eventually, I started sort of making nicer surfaces to work on. This way I made a joke. I said, whoever bought this painting could, that was my phone number at the time, and they could have their own promotional, whatever they wanted to promote on their own painting. But they ended up keeping it with just my phone number on there. But it was just like a funny. And sometimes there's just no explanation for a painting. I was just kind of commemorating this, you know, folk singer I love, Neil Young, as this kind of prairie home rebel companion of mine. So of sorts that I love. Yeah, architecture sometimes inspires my work. This was in the south of France at the Radieuse, a Corbusier building, and I was sort of interested in these intersections of, like, Corbusier is considered this utopian architect, but at the same time there's sort of something brutalist about it and sort of uninhabitable, even though it has this ideals of utopian ideals. To me, there's something kind of, yeah, oppressive about the architecture. So I made these kind of paintings based off of this kind of oppressive architecture and human resource center. I don't know what it was, you know, sometimes I just trust my instinct and just go. I don't really have an explanation. I'm like, that's such a strange painting. What's a human resource center and people are coming here to burn their clothes? It just didn't really, but I accept it. I just accept to like these open-ended narratives. And this is more of an autobiographical narrative. This is sort of the typical Southern California suburbs, kids, you know, kids escaping their parents, the high school, the suburbs, the police, to go up on the hills and get away from it all. And, you know, and this is called temporary dropout. And this is sort of looks like a lot of the suburbs I grew up in Southern California. This was also sort of, I guess what seemed as normal to America for me, I was like struck by, like the food court in the mall was like, wow, this is so different than in Paris or the suburbs. Or so for me, it was like, I was kind of like marking what seemed like maybe these obvious American things. But for me, this was a slogan we had in the subway during, you know, post 9/11. And it was just like, all of a sudden there was this overt paranoia and safety and security. And all of a sudden it was fashionable for the people were wearing NYPD hats, you know, all of a sudden it was cool to wear police clothes, and it became this sort of paranoid surveillance state a little bit. I mean, rightfully so to some extent, but then it became also over the top. These are these paper surveillance cameras I made out of paper, just kind of. So a lot of my work really kind of took on this state of mind, and it kind of started taking over my work a little bit. Again, it's like the neighborhood watch, seeing through your walls, your neighbors. I mean, maybe it wasn't as apparent here, but being in New York post 9/11, it was just such a shift from what it was prior to after. These are all oil on board. That painting's almost that size. So as I get more skilled with my material, as I'm still learning, eventually the paintings are slowly getting bigger and bigger, getting more comfortable with them. This is called After the Gold Rush. A lot of my work also, the relationship between man and nature, or architecture and nature, and the disjuncture sometimes. I mean, here's this ridiculous, like, ski lodge just lumped on top of this mountain, and the awkwardness of these spaces and places sometimes, as beautiful as they are, but their relationship and how they coexist. This is called Feast of Fools. This is loosely looks like Los Angeles from the hills, from the Santa Monica Mountains. This painting is called Newfoundland. As critical as I was of some things of America, I was also grateful in remembering, like, well, every day there's people trying to immigrate here, coming here. Like, this is an image that you would see from, like, Haitians or Cubans. Like, it was still like this land of possibility and this land of hope, you know, and here they are, like, trying to come up to some Miami shores. It's like an interrogation room. I mean, some of these are just sinister, you know. It's not, but life is not just a bowl of cherries, and I don't want to just paint beautiful flowers and beautiful mountains, because the reality is I want to expose to a bigger, deeper, darker reality. This is actually from Waco, Texas. This is a local image. This is loosely based off of the documentary I saw in Waco, Texas, The Last Engagement. And questionable on both ends. I mean, what David Koresh was doing inside and how the police fumbled and dealt with it on the other side. I mean, it was just... So the work was getting really, you know, political, and I didn't stand with everyone else, so I just kind of put it in the past tense, united we stood. It wasn't as simple, you're either on our side or the other side. It was like, no, I don't stand with what we're doing, and I don't agree with it. This was critical mass during the RNC in New York. This painting is called Blind Faith and Tunnel Vision. This idea of you just persevere ahead and destroy whatever you need to on the way and hope that there might be some hope at the end of the tunnel, the light at the end of the tunnel. But I like where things can kind of like flip-flop between, is that a nuclear explosion, or is that like a radiating light from the gods, or is it, I like how things can potentially go either way. This is after the second election, where we thought maybe Kerry was going to win, and then Bush won, and then it felt like, oh, well, there was talk of the Democratic states succeeding and the Republican states, you know. So I put all the Democratic states to the left of the Mississippi, and I put America upside down, and I put all the Democratic states to the left of the Mississippi, and then I put all the Republican states to the right, and then I put all the, quotes, inferior countries below. It was kind of like my real, like, adamant political painting. So the work was really much more directly, like, political earlier on, I feel. So I'd made a car in case of, from one of my shows in New York, I made this car in case of a survival mode, and it had everything one would need to escape New York City, just in case. Because there was all of a sudden they were even selling parachutes for skyscrapers. I mean, it was like this marketing of fear. I mean, sure, it was scary and dangerous, and I bought into it too. But there was such this, like, propagating of fear, so I was like, I'm really going to play this out. I'm going to make a car that's this marketable survivalist car that had everything one would need. So inside the car was all the gear, the nuclear fallout, the clothing, it had everything. And then, so I felt like there was, and I had this kind of war against abstract painting at the time. And this is a text painting. I said, we regret to inform you there's currently no space or place for abstract painting. I was kind of like, I just felt like abstract painting was frivolous and it had to have like a message or it had to fight for a cause. Like the world was falling apart and what are we doing just squiggling around lines and shapes? It's like there's something has to be. So here I tried to make an abstract painting. That's the funny part. But then I still had to put these strings around it. And it's called boxing your subconscious. So it's like boxing it in or else it looks like a boxing ring. But it was like it was a way that I still had to solidify it in some kind of reality for me. This is one of the few sculptures I made. I had a friend who passed away of cancer, and I sort of made this as a commemorative, votive piece of sorts. And then this is when he was dealing with the cancer. We were torn between Western medicine or Eastern medicine, and there was this place in Northern California, this holistic healing center in near Mount Shasta, and he thought about it, but then he went through the Western medicine. But this was, I just kind of illustrated this place from my imagination. We did research. And this is after he died, unfortunately. And this was this idea of like, this was a memorial, and it was me being, not really being so religious, even though I grew up sort of Catholic, but not really being more of an atheist, and this notion of like how to trying to find some kind of spiritual connection or some kind of, so these rainbows kind of became like a metaphor for some kind of like people trying to find some kind of spiritual, godlike, yeah, relationship or connection. A lot of these pieces were dealing with death, the cycles of mourning and dying. I spelt it wrong, but I sort of intentionally, but chances are we'll have to leave, and then I did. I went to Germany, and I went to Berlin. This is the Reichstag, obviously, after World War II, but I decided to go to Berlin and get away from, I just felt like the work was just getting consumed by the current affairs in America, and I wanted to be in another country, and I thought, oh, everyone's going to Berlin. There's such a talk about Berlin. So I went to Berlin, and it was, all of a sudden, it was just difficult because I didn't understand the culture, and I had nothing to really respond to or react, and it was kind of like, people in Germany seemed pretty well acclimated and everything seemed to kind of be working fine. And I wasn't like the craziness of America in some ways. That inspires me, that I love as well. The craziness of America, I love it as well. And the eclecticness and the mix of people. In Germany, everything was kind of just running smoothly. And it was like a challenge for me. And these are kind of these images of like this brutalist architecture you'll see in the east of Berlin. But I wanted to all of a sudden reconfigure it. I just had these images of like old Hitler documentaries where you see people in perfect formation, and all of a sudden it was this whole new world order. It was people were just like, it was just the complete opposite. It was all of a sudden very anti-authority. You know, it's like 50 years later, the Germans all of a sudden were like it went the opposite end of what it was, I guess you could say. This is called Little Men, Big Map. And sometimes I like painting like something, like the map became like an abstract painting in a realistic painting in a sense. And it was kind of my experience in Germany, just sort of like looking, the map is this big abstract thing, like where am I? What is this place? This is about 6 by 5 feet. So these paintings are getting bigger as they, and that's sort of my experience in Germany. I felt like that little skier in front of this big glacial mountain. It was just like, I just felt like on the outside of this. I like that, this little detail. It's all oil. Does anyone know who this is? No one ever does, but it's the president of Austria. This is interesting to me because in Austria and in Germany, there was such this post-World War II, you know, guilt, rightfully so. But then in America, I was like, well, we had our Holocaust too. The Indians, what happened to all the Indians? And there's not this weight or this history like there is in Germany with their World War II. And I'm like, well, we had our own Holocaust. And there's no real, we don't really acknowledge it anymore. So I made a map of California with all the tribes that were in California pre-contact. So it's called California pre-contact. And those are all the different Chumash tribe, all the different tribes that were in California at the time. And that was the president looking at it. is you can get the kid out of California, but you can't get the California out of the kid. And that was my experience in Germany, sort of just I felt like all of a sudden you become very aware of your otherness in another place. It's kind of like a flight map between Europe and America. But it was just an excuse to try to make more abstract-based painting, but also these kind of like networks or links between countries, cities. This is in Berlin. There was in the train stations, they have these sort of like vitrined little train tracks with the perfect little Bavarian village and city. And I was kind of obsessed with these, so I made a couple paintings based off of these. And they kind of became symbolic to me of like my experience being in Germany. Like, this is Germany, but I've always felt like, you know, I never felt like part really integrated or part of it. So it was my experience kind of like behind the glass looking in at these. Oh, this was funny. This was one night in Berlin. I saw these people on a boat and I realized they were protesting, but they were all together on a boat protesting to no one. And I just thought it was kind of amusing. There they all were on this boat and they were just sort of, who was the protest to? It was just this own inside kind of. Oh, so then this is, I came back to New York and it was kind of back to business as usual. And my dealer asked me to make a painting for an art fair. And I just said, you know, I just felt like, at that point, I started feeling like how buying art became a speculative thing. And at that point, there was a lot of success in my work. And people were just buying anything they could because it was just a worthy investment. At that point, it was like, well, it was cheap enough. Or you buy it for this price, sure enough, it'll be double in a couple of years. So, and then I was like, okay, well, let's see how this one goes. So I made this portrait of my dealer at the time. And I just made the kind of the ugliest painting you could to kind of challenge him. And I made a beard with like brushes and pens. I made his beard out of brushes and pens. And then he actually sold it. But but yeah, the art world is a funny thing. You know, there's people that really love art and are really buying art. And then there's also this, yeah, there's this, you know, I was so innocent to it, but there's this big speculative side of it too. Which was, you know, I was just kind of naive, like, oh, people just love art and they buy art. This is great. And then I realized, oh, no, people buy art and then they flip it like real estate or gold because it can do better than either of those. So I bought a building. A junky looking building in Brooklyn, but it looks a lot better now. And it was a real rundown space and I made it into a sort of community center of sorts. I was like, I wanted to do something. It was in a really poor, deprived neighborhood. So over the course of a couple of years, I transformed it and made it into a sort of community center. At first, it started just as parties and concerts. I did an art fair there with all the local Brooklyn galleries. I wanted to do something positive besides just hoard my money. And I wanted to do something to my neighborhood and contribute. So I ran this space for 3 years, crazy performances, bad theater, local church parties. The local church next door would rent it out for quinceañeros and baptisms, rock concerts, yoga in the morning. So it was like this was Saturday night, this was Sunday morning. So it just became too much to juggle, you know, trying to coexist. And I decided to, you know, make it my studio eventually, but it was a great experience. It proved to be too much of a problem, so I stopped. And I mean, meanwhile, I was still painting the whole time. But I this painting is interesting to me because this is sort of pre-social media. This is like when billboards were actual billboards and people were still, that was the form of communication. But it's also, for me, it was an interesting painting because it's also just kind of still flirting with that language of abstraction or just pushing something, hovering between abstraction and representation. I mean, it's a billboard with signs on it, but it's really just a bunch of squares on this. It's really what makes it abstract or realistic. It's kind of that duality between, yeah, landscape and abstraction. This is called Canceled Landscape. This is post-Katrina, sort of inspired by this image of Katrina and this rope that people had connecting them and then it's canceling out of landscape. Again, this is another painting kind of playing with. It's a landscape, it's a portrait, it's an abstract painting. This is called Island Hopper, sort of this idea of this like romantic idea of like going from one island to another, or the roaming, floating nomad. Another reoccurring theme sometimes is like nature, man's relationship to nature. This is the tiny little people by the waterfall. You can see the massive waterfall, and then you see these tiny little people. This is parts of the key. I was interested again, I'm interested in sometimes these marginal societies. This is out in the Key West, and these sort of dropouts living in their boats, floating around. I don't know. I was interested in people that were like, you know, didn't choose the, they went off the beaten path and on their own paths, and some of them precarious, dubious paths. But it's always intrigued me, this sort of like this alternative. I traveled extensively through South America, and I had a friend who had a sailboat, and we sailed down to Panama, and we found along the coast of Costa Rica and Panama, we found all these little encampments of expats living on the beach, and I it was just sort of like this modern day Gauguin, but it was more just surfers and burnouts of sorts. This is to give you an idea. Here's my studio, working in studio. I'm working, this was me working on a show maybe 3 years ago, and I'm, like you see, like you can see here, I'm working on all these paintings at once. None of these paintings are done. And that one, that big circle, that's actually a piece of tape that's a stencil on top of that painting. So I'm bouncing around from one painting to another, and I sort of finish them all at the same time. I start them more or less all at once, and then I finish them all, and they all sort of, quotes, grow up at the same time. I kind of work on all of them over the course of a couple months, and the whole show kind of comes to come. So yeah, the paintings really started intuitively. This was just me with an oil stick and paint, and this is like me just making these marks or these lines. I don't have a sketchbook. I don't work from photography. I just kind of jump in, and then I'm just kind of responding to what I have or the images that are there. And then I didn't really know what I was. It was really just these abstract shapes. And then I'm slowly. Comes into, I'm sort of just trusting my instinct and slowly make it into a full image. But at first it was really just an abstract painting. I didn't know what it was. And I was like, oh, this. What if it was fireworks or an explosion or people around these fireworks? But they're kind of like so big that it becomes like menacing. And so that's how some paintings are built. This is again me playing with like trying to make more abstract based paintings, but I still had to have some text or something to like ground it in some kind of reality. And this is called I Infect You, You Infect Me. It was this kind of like explosive relationship between painting or people, this sort of like, I wanted how to illustrate that sort of explosive. So the text was helping me ground the paintings in something. Without the text, I just felt like I didn't have anything to, without image, I need something to believe in. Or it's like, if not, it's just shapes and color, and there's no parameters. It's just this endless, like, free-for-all. And with here, it's like, no, I'm illustrating this rock that's blocking this road, and then these cables are pulling this rock away from the road. Even though it is pretty much an abstract painting, I still have that idea in my head or something I can believe in. This is a huge painting. It's like 8 by 10 feet. This sort of just becomes about almost like social media or Facebook or Instagram, all this like just pixelated over inundation of information and people and looking and trolling and voyeurism. And this is an 8 by 10 foot painting. It's a big painting. There it is. This is a show I had at Deitch Projects in 2010 before he went, right before he went to the LA, right before Jeffrey Deitch went to MoCA for a year or two. Clint Eastwood, Good, Bad, Ugly, it's called. That's a painting that's up in the show. It's called We Warned You About China. It was just, like I said, I'd made a lot of Map America paintings, and I thought it was time to make America's rivalry painting, China, you know, which I'm afraid is the next superpower. And this fear of, like, I always grew up thinking, well, we're always in the safest, biggest, best country. And then all of a sudden it was sensing a vulnerability as an American or being in America and realizing, oh, wow, there's this other country that actually... yeah, might surpass us in the time I'm alive. Travel's always a big inspiration, influence for me. And this was a crazy adventure I went on in India. I went on a motorcycle trip for 6 weeks. We rode our bikes from New Delhi to Nepal, which was an amazing experience. But I had a very scary near-death experience there. But it inspired a lot of paintings from this show that I did at Deitch Projects. The show was called Premonitions because I had a premonition there, strangely enough. I made this painting not knowing I was going on a motorcycle trip to India or any of it. And then I went on a motorcycle trip to India and I had a really bad accident, strangely enough. So for me, it was like, oh, wow, paintings sometimes can be like a premonition. Like, I had no idea I was going to India, and I made these paintings, and I almost died in a tunnel at one point, and then I had this really bad crash. So it was just an amazing adventure, but it was something that was... I definitely learned something from that. This painting's also upstairs in the show. This painting is called Dismounted. This was like an image of... this was an image based off of a photo. Usually I don't work from photo, but this was an image I'd found in a book of like an old Chumash chief on top of his horse with his two daughters on the back, and I thought it was kind of symbolic of Obama. But then I thought, oh, well, the great big hope has sort of been dismounted or knocked off his horse, so I kind of just... ghosted out the chief and just left the two daughters in this kind of like, you know, what I hoped for and what it was and how a president that wasn't able or capable of doing what he wanted to and had so many restrictions and Republicans gave him every obstacle they could along the way. So there it was, dismounted. That was part of my show at Deitch. It's also in the show. I made the letters us, the speakers. The speakers are just broadcasting us as if like these are us, our words, our sounds. This is called City Dwellers and Star Seekers. Again, these images of like, these idea of like these little micro communities of people or groups kind of like taking refuge away from, I see like over the course of years of making paintings, I start to see like, oh, I'm just sort of making paintings subconsciously or intuitively. And I was like, oh, well, there's those themes again of like people removed from this bigger thing or this experience of like isolation amongst a bigger world or finding refuge amongst a bigger world. And this is like a kind of privileged rooftop party, not specific to any specific place. It's more, I actually had to make something for the Met Opera in the city. They asked me to make the cover for the bill, but meanwhile they were doing a big construction site in front, so I included all of it. They really liked it. It was a success. My uncle has this beautiful house near Bordeaux, and he lives there all year round, and this is sort of his little utopia on the near Bordeaux on the ocean. And I've spent all my summers as a child going there, and this is just sort of a painting commemorating his space in this kind of Edenic setting that we grew up in as kids. This is loosely based off of an image in California, seeing, and once stumbled across this tree in the mountains, and I was inspired. I saw this homeless man had hung all these things in this tree, and I realized the tree was sort of his closet, and he was using the tree as his, like, you can see sunglasses and his bag and his flip-flops, and it was sort of like, it's called the Enlightened Burnout Tree. And I was just kind of like enamored by the simplicity of, you know, certain people's living situations and the precariousness of it, and being grateful for my situation, not forgetting. Yeah, again, another studio shot, just to give you an idea of, see that pink painting, that just starts with the color, that's the pink square, and then that yellow thing is, the pink is the first day, and then that yellow top right is, maybe you start adding some colors to the yellow, and then slowly just kind of builds up. I sort of like, you know, like I like to think of it as making a painting as like a road trip into the unknown. Like, I don't know what that pink painting is going to be. I just trust that maybe whatever color I respond with will lead to something else, and I just trust it. And then the next thing you know, I sort of make these whatever you want to call these worlds. So still exploring other things, even though I really gravitate towards landscape or scenes or people, trying to make more abstract base paintings, or even though it's like obviously figurative, but like that line between it's figuration in the sense that you see a silhouette of a profile, but really it's just a bunch of colorful lines. That's 8 by 10 feet. It's big paintings, these ones. And also kind of, at the same time I'm making these landscape paintings, I'm also trying these profiles or these like burst explosions. I think of these sort of as these sort of flowers or explosions. Again, this potential to be, I like that it could be positive or negative. It's not just like sugar-coated, or it's not just doom and gloom. Like, is that positive or negative? Is it an explosion or a flower or... That's in two panels. It's 8 by 10 feet, and I paint on wood, so I have to break them into two panels. So in the very middle, you can see there's one little slight seam going up, but I kind of just tried to break it up. So it's a diptych of sorts. Just trying to capture this energy. Just with color and line, it's just... I mean, I'm all over the place a little bit, you know, from this to this to this to this. But I like keeping that open-ended. It allows me a lot of freedom where I don't have to just give this or do this. And you can see, like, the tree trunk and the tree in this painting, you see those stripes and those colors, because really the whole painting was just an abstract painting with those stripes and colors. And then I decided I didn't have anything to believe in, so I made this scene or this tree, and I painted around the stripes and colors to paint. I didn't paint the tree, I painted the dark sky around it to define the tree. I don't know if that makes sense. So I did a series of paintings like this. Again, that the whole tree trunk, you see those stripes and that whole other painting underneath, that was a whole other painting underneath. And I slowly painted, I didn't paint the tree, I painted the sky around the tree to define the tree. I did a series of globe paintings with this idea, this absurd idea of, I'm going to try to paint the world. You know, it's sort of zooming out, like what's macro or micro and how far back. But it's also, again, another excuse just to explore abstract painting, but still having something believable to grasp onto. So there you can see I was doing stencils. See the white head and the, I would paint, but now I'm painting more directly, but sometimes, yeah, like I said, I would paint with stencils and this Pangaea portrait. This idea of all these globes and people as one prior to pre. It's called Psychedelic Soldier. That's 8 by 8 feet. It's called Boys Club. And then in the back, I like making, again, paintings and paintings. So in the back, it sort of allows me to take on an alter ego and make these other portraits or paintings, the paintings in the painting of sorts. And that's the idea of like the predecessors or the old Boys Club and the patriarchy of what was prior, and then this kind of like continuation of these sort of elitist, isolated boys club that have a lot of power and pull. It's called Off Base. Kind of commemorating the soldiers and wanting them back home. There's a flood scene. This painting's in the show, Idle Hands. This idea of everyone sort of is coming and has their martyr or mentor or someone they're fighting for. Everyone has their sort of, everyone's on their own little, their own singular campaign of sorts. I had to make this painting for a show called, the theme was disaster, and I don't really like doom and gloom, or even though my paintings, I still don't really like to like, I'm still an optimist, or I'm still a peacenik at heart, and I don't really like commemorating violence, so I kind of just had it, sort of be like this, people kind of passively observing from far away, or sort of like as an outsider from a distance. So here you can see like similar things of like the phase where I'm like working with these big oil sticks or doing these big lines, and then here again, but here it's more this jubilation of fireworks and celebration. That painting is also in the show upstairs, in case you haven't seen it. It's called Ecstatic Contact, just trying to make an abstract painting, but then having the hands is grounding it in some kind of figurative element, or thinking of cave paintings or Lascaux of sorts. Bradley Manning. I could go on forever, but I think I have a lot more slides, but it's been 45 minutes. And I like Q&A makes it funner sometimes too, or not as, doesn't put as much pressure on me. I mean, maybe we can start with some Q&A, and anyone have any questions? No questions? Oh, there we go. Okay.
Are you all on canvas now, no more ceramic or?
No, it's all on board. It's all on wood. So after, I never really worked on canvas. I went straight from ceramic to wood, essentially.
Same kind of wood?
It's a birch. Birch plywood. It's a really nice high-grade, furniture-grade plywood, but it's really thin. It's only a quarter inch thick, and it's reinforced on the sides. But it's a nice, it's beautiful. material. Yes?
When we went and looked at the exhibit upstairs, it still smells like wet paint. Which ones are still wet?
Oh, really? Well, the two smallest paintings I brought on the plane with me in the suitcase. So those two tiny paintings I brought with me because I always work till the very last minute.